Anna, remember that time Jane Austen was afraid of the French Revolution? Welcome to Remember That Time, an historical podcast. I'm your host, Anna Webb.
And I'm your host, Amanda Webb. This is a podcast where two sisters totally geek out on all their favorite moments in history.
Wow. I don't know, I was just looking to mix it up.
Okay.
Just looking for something different.
Wow. Okay. So, a couple of things. We are in person today.
We are
today.
In the same room.
It's going great already. Also, we just got back from a large dinner.
I am so full of pasta.
Yeah, we had Italian.
I think I'm going to die.
We went out to dinner. We had Italian food.
And
dessert.
Don't know if this is a known thing to you. I know that Sawyer knows this. I get a little silly after I've had too much pasta. Because I just become... I don't know. There's something...
Why did you say you don't know if it's known to me? I've known you your whole life.
That's true. That's true. Also, we got Sawyer in the live studio audience.
Hi!
So, like, we're just having a great time.
Things
here
are going really good.
Yeah, we're vibing. Straight vibing.
Should we go right into the drink update?
Absolutely.
Because I'm having wine.
Yes, had some with dinner. So by the end of this episode, we're going to be having a nice time.
And I did also have a cider before we went to
dinner. Excellent, excellent, excellent.
Which is not that much.
No.
Really, but and over also over the course of like two
hours. Yeah. I'm drinking water.
Great.
I have Sprite.
Thank you, Sawyer.
Sawyer has Sprite.
Sawyer in the studio audience.
Don't know if the mic picked that up. Sawyer does have Sprite.
Huge to know.
So
hugely important. I also think this is going to be just a fun one generally
because
today we are talking about somebody who's been on my list for a very long time.
Yeah, you love.
Miss Jane Austen.
I love
Jane Austen so much. Pride and Prejudice is my favorite.
Everything.
Favorite.
Story.
Like, yeah, just generally. Yeah. I love it so much, and I was looking at the list, our old list that we have not updated in a really long time, of podcast topics, and I was like, it's time. It's time for Jane.
Yeah, I've been waiting for it.
Yeah, love
I've
her.
I've been waiting for this one.
Oh, no.
Oh, boy. Okay.
So, we're talking about Jane Austen, which just means we're just going to be goofing because I just love her so much.
Mood. Yeah, let's go.
All right. So, just as a general note here at the top, most of what we know about Jane Austen comes directly from her family.
Yeah.
Because there wasn't a lot recorded about her, obviously, throughout her life. Her earliest biographers were family members, usually like nieces and nephews. So the very first writings we have about her are from direct family members.
Right, okay.
But a lot of what we know about her life is very speculative. There's a lot of debate around a lot of different things. And only about 160 of the roughly 3,000 letters she wrote in her lifetime have survived.
That's right.
And been published because her sister, who she wrote a lot of her letters to, destroyed a lot of them because she wanted to ensure that, this is a quote, the younger nieces did not read any of Jane's sometimes acid or forthright comments about neighbors or family members.
So she was gossiping.
Destroyed a lot of them, like, as they went through life. And then after she passed, because her novels were already very popular, like,
she didn't want her reputation to be affected by how people learned about Jane. Yeah.
She would rather their family kind of be in charge of that narrative.
Sure.
Right?
Or for them to know her based on her own works.
Yes.
That were intentional, made to be put out to the public.
Yeah. So there will be some times where it's just, we don't really know a lot about this period, or like, oh, we're a little unsure about how she felt about this just because she did write about all of it. We just don't have a lot of it left.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Some of it's speculative based on the people around her.
Yeah. All right. Jane Austen is born on December 16th, 1775 in Stevenson, Hampshire, to George and Cassandra Austen. Now, here's where Sawyer used my laptop for a little bit earlier typed a note. I'll just read you what Sawyer thought was important to add to Jane Austen's story.
Great.
Stone Cold Jane Austen went on to fight zombies and saved the planet.
Oh, boy.
Thanks, Stone Cold Jane Austen. So we're just going to get that one out of the way here at the top.
Someone read Pride and Prejudice and Zombies.
And Zombies, which is a slay.
Yep. Okay.
Anyway, so Stone Cold Jane Austen is the seventh of eight children.
Oof.
Godspeed.
Too many.
Two girls, six boys.
Wow. Yeah.
The order of the kids. James, George, Edward, Henry, Cassandra, Francis or Frank, Jane, and then Charles.
A lot of regal names for the boys.
Yeah, yes. Throughout her life, she ends up being closest to Cassandra and Henry. We will hear about them right. the most. Okay. George actually had, we don't know what, some type of mental disability.
Okay.
And got sent away very early in his life.
Sure.
So we don't hear about George very often. Mm. Her father was a reverend, and he had, like, two parishes that he was in charge of.
Weren't they all?
Yes, they
Everybody
sure
was
were.
A reverend. We yeah. talked about this last time.
Yes, we did. Oops, all reverends.
Everybody was a reverend.
He also farmed and tutored a few local students to help supplement their income. Because there were eight of them.
Right, yeah.
You know? Yep, so, yep. yeah, he had, like, he rented a small farm that he worked. And then there were other kids who lived with them sort of on and off through Jane's childhood because he tutored local students.
Yeah, sure.
In 1783, Jane and Cassandra are sent to Oxford for boarding school. And they're only there for a couple of months because they both get typhus.
Oh.
And they have to come home. And it almost killed Jane. Wow. She was very, very sick from the typhus.
From the typhus.
In 1785, they return to another boarding school, Reading Abbey's Girls' School. They were...
That's probably Reading.
Like I think you're like right, actually. City. Yeah, I just read it straight up.
No, I hear you.
No, you're right, because it was in Reading. I read that. Look at that.
Wow. Okay.
They were probably being taught French, spelling, needlework, dancing, music, and drama.
Dancing.
Yes.
They have to be able to dance and play.
Yes.
Yeah.
She was apparently a very big fan of dancing. She enjoyed that.
Sure.
I remember reading that somewhere as I was doing my research.
You get that from her books, I think.
Yeah. So it would have been like, it was boarding school, but it was education for women
for
at
girlies.
The time.
For the girlies.
They come home again in late 1786 because the tuition fees are too high for them to continue.
Sure.
So the rest of their schooling they finish at home.
I was gonna say I'm kind of impressed they were able to send the girls to school
mm-hmm.
at all.
I think the first two times it was like through some friends.
Oh,
it's like kind of what got their foot in the door.
It's not like he wasn't making money, but that's a lot for eight kids, and then to say the girls are going to go to school. Mm-hmm. That's
well, and this is an important part of her childhood is that like there is a culture of education and creativity and like they
well again you can tell from her writing
yeah they
she values education for women
lively like their home is very open they are a very close family so like
I'm just impressed they were able
to
do
it so the rest of her education is mostly done by her father and her older brothers.
Mm-hmm.
She used some of the same school books as the boys in her family, which would have been a little odd at the time.
Yeah, but who would know? They're in the house. Who knows the difference?
She had access to her father's library and that of a family friend, so she got to just read and read and read and read.
Yeah.
When she was young, it made up a very large library, which was, they aren't like gentry.
They're like a farm family.
They're on the edge, I would say.
They're like the Bennets.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, like, yes, they would have books, but to have a library of that size, books were expensive.
Yeah.
Like, I was reading, you know, later when I was reading about her published works.
Right.
It was like, 15 shillings, but that's equivalent to, like, $60 today.
Yeah.
Like,
books were not meant to be made readily available to everyone.
Yeah, so
and
it
was there was a reason for that.
Pretty lucky you know? That she was able to access such a large library.
Yeah, he had to have been collecting that for a long time.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
They also would put on private plays in the rectory barn.
Of course.
With her family and her friends.
Very Little Women.
Yeah, she ended up dabbling in some playwriting through this period, but it's not really, nothing really comes of most of it. But that would have been commonplace. Like, they would...
Absolutely.
She would write poems and stories. She probably started writing around age 11.
Mm-hmm.
And she would write, like, poems and stories and then read them aloud to her family as entertainment in the evening.
Or her siblings would read them with her.
Yes,
and, yeah.
So that was, like, in the evenings, they'd all sit down together and Jane would read some of her work. And that would be, like, how they would spend their
time.
Because
what else are you going to do?
Exactly. Yeah, 100%. So, from around 1787 to 1793... She writes a ton.
Yeah.
And 29 of her early works are compiled into a collection that we now know as the Juvenalia.
Right.
It is basically all of her early work from her teen years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a lot to produce at that age.
Yes. Yeah. It's a series of 6 years when she's quite young. That's wild. So she collected her handwritten manuscripts into 3 notebooks, which she called Volume the First, Volume the Second, and Volume the Third.
Yeah.
And collectively, it's about 90,000 words of writing.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. She, we got some Hamilton vibes. She
yeah,
is writing,
bury that.
Like, she is running out of time. That is her energy. When she is about 14, she writes a satirical, like, novella called Love and Friendship.
Yes, of course.
And it's a satire of novels of sensibility.
Right.
And these were very popular at the time because we're exiting this, like, age of the rational.
Right.
So it was a lot of, like, very straightforward works up to this point, and there's this big wave of these novels of sensibility, which is you know, a little more romantic but very like proper society kind of a deal, and a lot of her works are satires of novels of sensibility. That was very, she was a comedic writer.
Yeah.
Not a and comedy she, writer,
but
no,
she
but has she this.
She had a knack for commenting on things. Like, I think her real accomplishment as an author is riding that line between a real life story, real life possibilities, and satire of everything that came before her.
She, commentary and satire were her skills.
Yes. Yeah. She would be an excellent commentary YouTuber.
Yes, she would. She absolutely
I would be watching
would.
Her video essays every day.
Yeah. She then writes The History of England, which is a 34-page manuscript.
34 pages for the whole history of England.
With 13 watercolor miniatures that her sister does.
Oh, I love that.
And it parodies a lot of the popular historical writing of the time, including Oliver Goldsmith's History of England, which was a very popular novel. So she gets into the satire very early in her life as well. We'll see that come up several times. Another, in that same vein, she starts a play called Sir Charles Grandison, or The Happy Man, a comedy in 6 acts.
Wow.
She abandons this. She eventually comes
back. Why did I say 6?
She
many.
Comes back and finishes it in 1800, but, like, nothing ever comes out of it. And it was also a parody of the, like, textbook abridgments of novels that she would have read when she was in school, because she hated them. And she, like, loved the novels, but hated the way that they were abridged in these textbooks. So this was, like, a parody of that.
That's funny.
Yeah.
What an interesting concept.
She has so many cool ideas.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't know the background of a lot of the novels in a lot of detail before I read about her, and all of them are so interesting.
So interesting.
Yeah. Around 1794, she begins writing an epistolary novella called Lady Susan. Epistolary novels.
Nailed it.
Are, written as if two characters are writing letters back and forth.
Right, sure.
That's what that style is.
Yeah.
It's one of her earliest works. It doesn't get published until, like, well after her death. I think it was, like, 1871 that this gets published.
Cool.
But, yeah, she starts it when she's very young. This I found fascinating.
Okay.
So, there has been some people have said that the model for the title character might have been Eliza de Feliud? It's French. I don't know. It's her cousin, and she, you know, lived in France for a very long time, had this very glamorous life, and her husband was guillotined in 1794, and it made her have to flee to Britain. And then when she got to Britain, she met
a man.
Well, Jane's brother, Henry.
Oh,
and they got married
In
1797. So, and Henry and Jane were very close, so she was a big part of Jane's life, this woman. But her stories of the French Revolution scared Jane so bad.
Well, sure.
She had a lifelong fear of the French Revolution.
as if it were a monster under her bed that was going to come get her.
Isn't that wild?
That's so
interesting. I did not know that.
That's so interesting. It's not that another revolution would happen and she'd be part of it. It's
no,
the
she
historical
was afraid
event that already happened.
Of the historical event, the French Revolution.
That's so
because
funny.
Her description of her husband getting guillotined.
Well, I mean, it would be unsettling.
Her so bad. Yeah.
It would certainly be unsettling.
Yeah.
That's
and
wild.
It's not like she's a super, super, super young. She's in like her late teens at this point when all of this happened.
This person
so.
Must have been a really compelling story.
Yeah, for sure.
Wow. And must have given all the details.
Yeah.
That's all I can imagine. Didn't sugarcoat it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. All right. So now, in 1795, Jane is 20 years old. And we have a moment that could have walked out of one of her novels. That
okay,
is a
right,
real
yeah.
life part of her life. This guy, Tom Lefroy, who is the nephew of a neighbor, visits Steventon. So is, like, comes to their house, visits their family. They probably met at, like, a local bar or ball or
have met many
at
times.
Church.
Yeah.
Like, that's probably how they met each other. He's a student who's moving to London to train to be a barrister.
Wow, okay.
And him and Jane spend a lot of time together. She mentions him in her letters to Cassandra a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the letters, there is a good bit of affection in them.
Sure.
Now, part of the speculation is she's also a very satirical writer, and she's super sarcastic in a lot
right,
of her letters
yeah.
to Cassandra. So the question is, was there a really deep affection, feeling him,
or was she playing?
Was she only writing like this because she did really like him?
Sure, yeah.
That the satire kind, like the sarcasm kind of comes through. It does
sure.
seem that she really liked him and he really liked her.
Okay.
And it seems also like he would have proposed to her.
Mm.
But his family sends him away in January of 1796.
Bummer.
Because the marriage just would not have worked out.
Yeah.
He has no money of his own.
And she wouldn't have really had a dowry.
Exactly.
Yeah.
At least not a big one. He's being financed by a great uncle in Ireland until he can start his career.
Wow, okay.
And so he can't support
aww.
A wife on that, right? Especially one who's got this very close family who's also clearly going to want to support her family.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
Like, she's going to want whoever she's with
to
be
them.
Able to do that.
Yeah.
And they don't have a dowry for her of any
right.
significant size.
Yeah.
So they can't help either.
Aww,
so
sad.
They never see each other again once
oh,
he leaves. Yeah.
Sad.
Yeah. The like dream of dreams is that he goes and becomes a barrister and gets real rich
and
then
finds
her.
Yeah.
But it's just not what
but
happened.
But you know what? She had her own career, so it was okay.
She did. Yes.
But it's still sad.
It's very sad. Yeah. And it's also like the only time it seems she was really serious about any suitor.
Yeah, sure.
We will only talk about one other important, significant
mm-hmm.
suitor in her life.
Right.
So
yeah.
like, yeah.
And she was, what did you say, 20?
20 when this okay. happened. Yeah. So like prime age to
yeah,
be married.
Yes.
Like I'm sure for Jane's family, this was not that bad outside of the fact that he wasn't going to be able to support her.
Yeah, but you have to think like, based on the way their family dynamics seemed, it seems like that probably wasn't their top priority, other than the fact that it would mean their kids were
secure.
Well taken care
yeah.
of.
Yeah. yeah. The dream for them was that they would be secure, not that
right.
they would be
but also
like,
that they'd be happy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
yeah. Around this time, she begins writing her very first full-length novel.
Right.
Like, sitting down writing a novel. It's called Eleanor and Marianne. The early drafts of it were epistolary. But eventually
right.
she changes it into, like, third-person narrative.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what eventually becomes Sense and Sensibility.
Right, right.
All of her novels have other names. Like, every one
yeah.
of them has an original name and then
and
what
then
it got published
right, that's
under.
Right.
So we'll talk about a lot of them as
yeah.
we go. After working on Eleanor and Marianne for a little while, she starts another project, First Impressions, which she finishes
mm-hmm.
in late 1797. This is Pride and Prejudice.
Right.
She, like we were saying before, read most of her writing aloud to her family, like, as she worked on them,
mm-hmm.
and this was a favorite of the family.
Well, yeah.
Her father loved this story.
It's so good.
It's so good.
It's so good. And
I
I've
love
read,
Pride and Prejudice I've read a, so much.
I've read other Jane Austen works, but that's the one that you always come back to.
Mm-hmm.
It's not surprising that it became
The classic. Mm-hmm. It's
absolutely.
So, of her works, it's just
so. It's so good.
And it's a perfect snapshot of the time.
Totally.
It's perfect.
And just enough satire,
yep.
but it's not insincere.
Just enough commentary, but it's still a very genuine love
you
story.
Root for the
it's so good.
Still? Yeah,
yeah,
she's brilliant.
The villains are perfect.
Ugh,
like, it's the best.
I love the villains.
I love Pride and Prejudice.
Okay, we can talk more about it later.
Yeah. In November of 1979, her father writes to Thomas Cattle, who's a publisher in London,
right,
and asks if he would consider publishing First Impressions.
Yeah.
And he returns the letter marking it declined by return of post. So
it didn't get to him.
Probably. Either that or he just sent
it right back.
Yeah. There is, like, no evidence that Jane knew that he did this.
Aww.
That he was trying to get her work published.
That's so sweet.
But isn't that really sweet he was like, this is my favorite. I'm going to try and get it published. Yeah. Because she's writing a lot, but she does not start a lot of attempts at publishing until a little later, and we'll talk about why.
Right.
But, like, in this point in her life, she wouldn't have really needed to publish her work outside of if she wanted others to read it.
Right, yeah.
Like, she, financially, they were fine. She wouldn't have really needed to do it. Yeah.
Her dad is so Mr. Bennett.
Yeah. He is. And she has that relationship with him.
Yeah.
She is very, very close to her father. Yeah. He is a direct model. Right, yeah. Yeah. 100%. In 19 instead of 17.
We bumped her right up.
Well, because it's all in the late 1700s until we get into the 1800s. So I was writing 1790 blank.
Right.
A lot. And it just got, I did it 100 times. In 1798, she begins writing a new novel titled Susan, which is a satire of Gothic novels.
Mm-hmm.
And this is Northanger Abbey.
Yeah.
Yeah, eventually.
Right.
And this poor novel goes through a journey. We'll talk about what happens with Susan. Yeah.
Yeah. Poor Susan.
Poor Susan. Yeah.
She really went through it.
And this is different than Lady Susan.
Oh, yes.
That is a different work.
Right,
They are totally different. In 1800, Jane's father surprises the family by announcing that he's going to retire and that they're going to move to Bath.
Cool.
Yeah. Now, I think he had some type of money that he got.
He had saved away.
Yeah, or a retirement fund by way of having been rector of the church,
sure,
whatever.
Yeah.
So it's not, like, terrible. Like, they are of retiring age, him and his wife.
Yeah.
It was just, he was just like, I'm retiring. And they were all like, oh.
What's the plan, Phil?
But they live at the church, right? Like, he's the pastor. So now they have to move.
There.
Now they have to move.
Yeah.
So they move to Bath. And Jane's very sad about leaving Steventon, and she's a lot less productive while they live in Bath.
Mm.
And again, there's a lot of conflicting information about, some people say she was very depressed from having to leave the countryside. Other people say, well, actually, it's probably just that she became very busy because they were living in a city.
And they weren't.
And now all of a sudden
they are
in the social circle in a way that they weren't before.
Totally.
So she probably just was out a lot more often and visiting family a lot more often.
Because
now her brothers are mostly married or
getting married.
Yeah. She's having the first of her nieces and nephews, of which she has a lot.
And
so,
when you were living in society in those days, that's just your whole life.
And it's completely different than living in the country.
Especially for a young woman.
Yes.
That's your whole life is this social system.
Yes.
It's wild.
Mm-hmm. So she writes a lot less when they live in Bath. She does start writing a novel called The Watsons around 1803, but she abandons it. It's one of her two famous unfinished works. Also in 1803. Her brother Henry gets in contact with a London publisher, Benjamin Crosby. And this is the first time that Henry kind of acts as, like, a literary agent, and he will for, like, the rest of her life. And they sell him the copyright for Susan. And he promises to publish it, but he doesn't give them a date or a time frame for the publication.
Bad deal.
He bought it for £10. Which is equivalent to £1,020 in 2023. All of the equivalencies I have are 2023. So just, it's pretty similar.
Ooh.
Yeah. So
that's not great, especially for how much, like, books cost.
Yeah.
Like, ooh.
Yeah, we'll talk later about another book she sold for copyright, and it got a lot more money.
Yeah.
But it's her first novel. She does not know this business. This is not an uncommon mistake.
Sure.
Especially for women writers. They would just sell off their works, hope that they publish it. They could, they couldn't. It is really
up
in the air.
Right.
So he just sits on this for a while. We'll come back to Susan.
Okay. So, put Susan on pause.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Put a pin in Susan. We'll come back to her.
Put a pin in Susan.
There's not a lot known about the next few years of Jane's life, because this is when a lot of her letters to Cassandra are destroyed.
Right,
sure. Because she was being real saucy. and again, there's lots of new nieces and nephews now, so there's a lot of children in her life, and Cassandra doesn't want to be like, we have a letter from Aunt Jane, and be like,
It's all gossip from all the people she hates in society.
Big time, yeah. I will also note, I think I bring this up again later, but as a note, Cassandra also never gets married. She had a fiancé who I actually think was one of their dad's former students.
Oh,
but
sure.
He was like overseas for something for some reason, and he got yellow fever and he died.
Oh.
And then she just never got into another relationship after that. So Cassandra also remains unmarried.
Gotcha. Do all the boys get married? All of the boys get married?
Except for George.
Okay.
Yeah. All
right. Right, because George was at some facility.
Yeah.
Okay, right.
What we do know is that in December of 1802, Jane receives her only known proposal.
Okay.
Here's the situation.
Your parents went away on a week's vacation. Indeed. They left the keys to the brand new Porsche. Okay.
Were they mine?
Hmm. Well, of course not.
Go full Leslie Knope here. So she and Cassandra visit their friends Althea and Catherine Bigg. Mm. And their younger brother, Harris Bigg Wither, had recently finished his education at Oxford.
Ooh, fancy.
And he was at home when they were visiting. This is a description from one of Jane's nieces, Caroline Austen, and a descendant of Harris Biggs Wither. They say he was not attractive. He was a large, plain-looking man who spoke little, stuttered when he did speak, was aggressive in conversation, and almost completely tactless.
He was a know-it-all.
So he was just not a very likable guy.
Mm-hmm.
He proposes, and at first, Jane accepts. Because here's why. He's very well off.
Yeah, I was going
to
say.
And he's due to inherit a lot of land near where Jane grew up.
She wanted to go home.
So she could go home.
Yeah.
His money also meant that she would be able to provide both for her parents, who are now retired.
Yeah.
Also her sister. Here's where I put that note. She had lost a fiancé to yellow fever in 1797. Yeah. And her brothers are all trying to establish careers.
Sure.
So she can help finance their careers with this money.
That's a lot of money.
It would have been a really good marriage.
Yeah.
But the next morning, she withdraws her acceptance. Because I think she woke up and was like, I actually didn't like this guy at all. And I don't think I could live with a person I don't like.
Yeah.
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 This, in a later letter that she sends to a niece who had been, like, asking for relationship advice, Jane wrote, this is a quote from that letter, having written so much on one side of the question, I shall now turn around and entreat you not to commit yourself further and not to think of accepting him unless you really do like him.
Aww.
Anything is to be preferred or endured rather than marrying without affection.
I've heard that quote before from her.
So she, it is very much her attitude that like, you know, if I was going to marry anybody, it would need to be somebody that I liked.
I at least liked as a person. Yeah.
So that's not to say that other people did not propose to her or...
It's just the only one we really know about.
Yeah, try to court her or anything. Because she was in society for a few years.
Yeah.
So certainly there were other people. Yeah. But that's, like, the one that is, like, noted that we definitely know about.
Right.
Oh.
Grip it and rip it! Yeah, grip it and rip it, bud.
Grip it and rip it! Sawyer on the track.
I've been sitting here for 30 minutes.
Well, on that note, here comes a bummer.
Okay, let's do it.
On January 21st, 1805, Jane's father dies suddenly. He had been sick, but he got sick really fast, and then he died relatively suddenly.
Sad.
So now...
Now they got no money.
Jane, Cassandra, and their mother are... Out
of luck. Yeah.
And they become very reliant on her brothers, who are all very willing to help. We're going to get you guys taken care of.
But they're not super rich either.
They're not super rich. They're all starting careers. They're all starting families.
Right.
Like, yeah.
Right.
So for the next 4 years, they bounce around a lot.
Mm.
So they spend part of this time in rented rooms in Bath. They leave the city in June of 1805 to visit family in Stevington and Godmersham. Sure. But when they're, like, visiting like that, that they can stay there for, like, a couple months. Sure, so, yeah. You know, they moved to Worthing on the Sussex coast, and they stayed at Stanford Cottage there. Let's see. In 1806, they moved to Southampton, and they share a house with Frank Austin and his new wife. Mm. But they spend a lot of time visiting branches of the family while they're there to kind of be, like, out of their
out
way.
Out of their hair. Yeah.
But finally, they get settled. Oh, wait, no. I had another thing before they got settled. Okay. I forgot this is when this came in.
Okay.
Just before they get settled. On April 5th, 1809, she writes an angry letter to Richard Cosby, who is,
who's still sitting Crosby, in her copyright.
Who also works with the other guy, yeah.
Yeah.
Offers him a new manuscript of Susan, an updated one,
mm-hmm.
And is trying to secure, like, an immediate publication of the novel.
Right, sure.
And saying, like, here's an updated version, I've done some work on it, let's publish it now.
Press, yes.
And she's also hoping to get the original manuscript back so she can try and find another publisher.
Sure, yeah.
Because now, with her father gone,
they need the money.
They need the money.
Yeah.
And if she can provide a little bit of income for the sisters and take a, or for her sister and her mom, and take a little of the burden off the brothers,
right,
that would be really helpful.
Yeah.
He replies that he had not agreed to publish the book by any particular time or at all, and that she could repurchase the manuscript for the £10 he had paid her originally. But the problem is, at the time, she doesn't have the £10.
I know, but that's, like, actually not as bad as I thought
it's
it was going
to
be.
It's not. But she doesn't have the money to do it then.
Yeah.
So he still sits on this, which is one of her earliest writings.
Yeah.
He still sits on this until 1816, when she finally has the money to get it back. And we'll talk about her getting it back later, but, like...
Wow.
Yeah. So...
He didn't even read it. You know that, right?
I know.
He didn't even read it.
Now, in mid-1809, Jane's brother, Edward... offers the girls Chawton Cottage, which is on his property in Chawton Village. So
right.
He and his family have recently moved there.
They
He's got
cottage.
A decent estate, and they have this cottage. So they move in there, and they are finally able to settle a little bit. Her niece Anna says their life in Chawton was a very quiet life, according to our ideas, but they were great readers, and besides the housekeeping, our aunts occupied themselves in working with the poor and in teaching some girl or boy to read or write.
Oh,
so they tutor
sure.
a little bit, they work around the house, and Jane
right.
starts writing more, and, you know, she settled, they need a more reliable income, so Henry starts really earnestly acting as her literary agent, and they work on getting her novels published. So, Henry connects her with the publisher Thomas Egerton, he's out of London, and he agrees to publish Sense and Sensibility.
Right.
It is now, Sense and Sensibility has changed. This novel is published on commission. So, she has a sour taste in her mouth for copyright from last time.
Yeah.
So, this is how publishing on commission works. Publishers would advance the costs of the publication, repay themselves as the books were sold, and then charge a 10% commission for each book sold from the author.
After that, yeah.
And the rest of the money goes to the author.
Sure.
It's a pretty good deal.
And that means that the author retains the rights to their book.
Exactly, yeah. And if the novel doesn't recover its cost through the sales, they're responsible for the costs, but
right.
as long as it sells, it pays itself off, all the extra money,
right.
Besides the commission, then goes to the author.
Right.
So, for somebody like Jane, who is, even though it ends up being, like, their income, she is, by all means, kind of publishing on the side.
Sure,
which is
yeah.
what most women of the time would do.
Right.
Female writers were typically not writing
most
for income. They
most
were writing on the side.
Most people wouldn't publish them.
Yes.
Yeah.
And if they did, they wouldn't put a name on it because
right.
that's
would,
not
or
very...
Or it was a man's name.
Yeah.
Or, yeah, like you said, like they usually had either wealthier husbands
uh-huh.
or a different source
and
of
like
income.
Looking to become an author by trade for a woman
was
a bad
was not,
look because
yeah.
in society... Oh, you shouldn't need that. You should rely on your husband for anything.
Well,
why do you need this money?
And women aren't supposed to be into, like,
yeah.
intellectual pursuits and, yeah.
Yeah. So this publishing on commission was a pretty common practice because they didn't really need to copyright their books because they weren't
right.
looking for full careers.
Right.
All of her future novels except Pride and Prejudice get published on commission.
Yeah.
So this is the practice she usually uses. As we were just saying, her novel gets published anonymously. As are most novels
yep.
written by women at the time. The title page just says it is by a lady.
Huh. By a lady.
That is exactly what it says. And
read
all
this
of,
book. It's by a lady.
And all of her future novels would be by the author of Sense and Sensibility.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So that way they knew it was the same work, but her name is still not on it. Which right. she doesn't seem to have a problem with. Is she? Because she's not looking to get famous.
Yeah, and also back then, like, having your name on your writing was a... I would say not quite as valuable as it would be, like, now, mm-hmm. because you're not, like, branding yourself in a way.
Yeah, and like, some of the male authors at the time were, that becomes more important sort of just after her time.
Yeah. But, and for men, you know, that's their career.
Yeah.
So you have to have that name or kind of branding mm-hmm. recognition, whereas yeah. for women who were publishing, like, not really as important, it, would it be great?
Mm-hmm. And for some people, it did matter. And
sure,
they published under their names.
Yeah.
But for her, all she was looking for was
to get paid.
I love writing.
To get it out there.
I think I'm really good at it.
Yeah.
I've always wanted to be published. I need some money for my family.
Right.
Like, that's kind
totally.
Of the, more the attitude she comes at it with.
Yeah.
So, Sense and Sensibility is published in 1811, and it is very popular with both the general public and with critics.
Yeah.
So, it's a big hit.
It was a hit right away.
Yes, it was. The first edition sells out in mid-1813.
Wow.
And these editions would publish anywhere between 500 and 800 books, depending on how popular it was. So, this one probably was closer to, like, 500-600.
Yeah.
Especially on commission. And, like, the type of paper they would use if it was more expensive. They wouldn't publish quite as much,
sure,
you know.
Sure, yeah.
But
I follow Moon's Rare Books on TikTok, and he's got some Austin First
yes,
editions.
Yes, he does.
They're very cool.
Yeah. So the first edition selling out, like, 2 years after for a brand new author.
Pretty big.
It's pretty good. Like, that's a good showing. She made about £140, which is equivalent to about £12,800 today. Which doesn't seem like a lot for us even today, but, like, that was a living back then. That was, like, not a bad amount
of
money.
Yeah.
Especially with her getting some stuff supplemented from her brothers. Like,
and it's not like it was being published, like, worldwide either.
No, that's
so
just...
for
that's
England?
Mostly just in London.
yeah, that's
like,
pretty good for one single area of mm-hmm. one country, basically. Yeah.
So he next publishes Pride and Prejudice in 1813, mm-hmm. after that first one sells out. And for this one, she sells the copyright to the book to him for £110, which is equivalent to about £9,100 today.
Not bad.
And I think because she saw that the first one sold well and that this guy really did right by her, she felt more comfortable publishing this one with the copyright.
Yeah.
It is incredibly well received.
Yeah.
And here's the bummer. If she had sold this one on commission,
she would have made more money.
She would have made around £475, which was twice her father's annual income.
Wow.
He made about £200 a year.
Yeah.
So she would have made a lot of money on this book had she sold it on commission, like, which I think is why she goes back to selling on commission.
Probably, yeah.
It's just like...
She's like, okay, people like me.
She just had bad luck with the publishing.
Well,
like,
she's not a business person.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah. He is able to start printing a second edition in the same year the novel came out. It came out in, like, May. He was printing the second edition by October.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah. So that was big. And also because he owns it. The printing the second edition is entirely on him because he has the copyright.
Right,
they're a little less willing to do a second edition when it's on commission because the likelihood that sells out is much lower.
Sure, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, because once you have the book,
they're
you're
less likely to be able to pay themselves
giving
back.
Giving it to friends or whatever.
Yeah.
They next publish Mansfield Park in 1814. It's less critically acclaimed, but it's still very popular with general readers.
Sure.
And this actually ends up being her most financially successful novel. She makes the most money off of
Mansfield
Park.
Yeah, because by that point, the public really loves her.
Yes.
So she could have written anything.
Yeah.
And they would have bought it.
Yeah.
I think.
Absolutely. This is such a strange thing. Several of her novels were translated into French without her knowledge or permission.
Huh.
And they're, like, all weird bootlegs of her books.
Interesting.
Because it's unprompted. The translator had to make a lot of changes. They were really loose about the plot because the plot, English plots, are going to sell different for French because the French were more into fantasy at the time. So they would change the plots slightly.
That's
and so what was left was like a real, like, bastardized version of the original story.
Huh.
Was just a very strange...
And she didn't see a penny of that.
No. And, like, she didn't really need to, because she probably didn't really want her name on those weird boots of her book.
That's a fair point.
But just the fact that there were Jane Austen bootlegs is really funny to me.
They could have worked with her to do a French translation.
Yes, they could have.
That was, you know... Because clearly there was a demand in France for her work, no matter what it was. Yeah. That's so interesting.
This is another one of my favorite stories.
Okay.
So, apparently, the Prince Regent, who goes on to be George the Fourth. Really loved her work.
Yeah.
And he kept a set of her books at each of his residences.
Huh.
So she was, like, one of his favorite authors.
Wow.
But here's the thing.
Oh, no.
In November of 1815, his librarian, James Sanitor, Clark, invited her to visit the prince in London. And he also kind of implied that she should dedicate her next novel to the prince.
No.
But she did not like the prince as a person.
No.
He was apparently a womanizer. He gambled and drank.
He was not nice.
And he was just, like, not it.
Yeah.
But she couldn't not go see the prince. So she visits him. But then this is like the shadiest thing that she does. She writes, "Plan of a novel, according to hints from various quarters," which is a satiric outline of the perfect novel based on the librarian's suggestions to her for a future Jane Austen novel. She was so annoyed by his literary advice that she makes this plan of a novel parodying the book that he wanted her to write.
That's
and it
so
was like
funny.
Revenge for all of the unwanted letters that he had sent her.
That's so
funny. Now, I don't think this gets published,
but she did
the
write
existence
it.
Of it is so funny to me.
So petty.
That is so
I
shady.
That.
I love it.
I love that.
According to hints from various quarters, she said, "Shut up."
She said, "Sure, I'll write that book.
Stop. Here's the book.
Okay.
Here's the book that you're trying to give me.
Sure.
Is it a good book, do you think?"
Yeah.
So good.
Should I trust you, the person who's not an author, or me, the person who's an author?
Who is an author, right. Yeah. In 1815, she gets a new publisher, John Murray. He's just more well-known in London, a little more successful.
Yeah.
She's got,
a leg
to stand on now, so yeah. In December of 1815, they publish Emma.
Yes. I love Emma.
Same.
I love Emma.
And then in February of 1816, they publish a second edition of Mansfield Park because she did that one on commission so she could take it over with her to the new publisher.
Right, right.
Emma does very well, but the second edition of Mansfield doesn't because it was already less well known with, like, the critics didn't like it as much.
Yeah.
And
well, and now she's put out a new book that is, let's be honest,
better. Yeah. And so the financials kind of end up canceling out.
Yeah.
Because the money she makes on Emma, she then ends up having to pay some of it back to make up for the gap on the second printing of Mansfield. Yeah. It is, though, around this time that she is able to purchase the copyright for Susan back.
Oh, good.
So she finally gets
Susan
back.
Susan's home.
Yeah. And it will, in this time, then become Northanger Abbey. Yeah. But it's really sad. We'll talk more about it later. It's really sad. That's one of the novels that gets published posthumously.
Right, yeah.
So she spent so much of her life trying to get that
novel
back.
But you know what? I don't think that it would have been as successful as Sense and Sensibility or Pride and Prejudice.
I agree.
I don't think
it was right that those were the first ones that she published because they were these commentaries on the popular novels of the time. This was the one that was a satire of gothic novels, which were a little less popular.
Yeah, sure.
So it's a great for a later book for her.
Absolutely.
But yeah, it just makes me sad that she never got to see that one
published.
In 1816, Henry had been trying to establish a bank, like that was the work that he was doing, and his bank fails.
Oh,
and
no.
And his brothers had also financially invested in the bank.
Of course.
So they aren't really able to provide for the girls as much as they had been before. Now, it's tough, but they do have a little bit of income
from Jane now.
Yes.
Yeah.
But now she's really determined to keep writing because
she
wants
to
provide for her
totally.
Family. So she begins working on another novel, The Elliots, which will eventually become Persuasion, which is another one that ends up getting published posthumously. Yeah. However, around this time, she starts to feel very sick. At the time, obviously, they didn't know what her illness was. It, you know, it was broadly called rheumatism, because everything was broadly called rheumatism back then. the theories now are that it could have been Addison's disease or Hodgkin's lymphoma is what we kind of think it was. Probably. Because it was, whatever it was degenerative. Like, she was just getting weaker and weaker. Despite her illness, though, she keeps writing. In early 1817, she begins writing The Brothers, which eventually becomes Sanditon, which is another one of her unfinished pieces. She completes about 12 chapters, but she stops working in March of that year because she was so sick. It became very difficult for her to walk, she's essentially bedridden for the last few months of her life because she just got very weak very fast. In May of that year, her family brings her to a doctor in Winchester to hopefully try and get her some treatment. And she's there for a couple of months, but she dies in Winchester on July 18th, 1817 at the age of 41.
Oh, man. Wow. You forget how young she was.
Yeah.
And because she wrote so much. Yeah.
Six published novels.
And like, all of them considered classics.
And like, that's wild. In a span of like 7 years.
Yeah.
She's buried at Winchester Cathedral, which was like a big get. Henry used his connections to get her buried there.
Which is like great now, because now we think of her as this historical figure.
Her epitaph did not say anything about her writing career. It was just otherwise like, you know.
She just was a writer. That was kind of it.
Cassandra and Henry, though, are really determined to make sure her final works get published.
Right.
Because they were the two that were closest to her.
Well, and they knew she worked really hard to try to provide for them when she could, and...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she has these last two completed works that just never made it to publishing, because even when she finished them, they were dealing with all this other financial strife at that period that it would have been hard.
Time. Mm-hmm. It takes time for a book to get published, so...
So they work with her publisher, Murray, to get Persuasion and Northanger Abbey published together as a set.
Right.
And... When they're published in December of 1817, Henry adds a biographical note where he reveals Jane as the author of the novels at her time.
Oh, that's so great.
So in her lifetime, her books never got published with her name.
Oh, that makes me so sad.
Yeah, her books never got published with her name in her lifetime, but the two that were published right after she died, Henry made sure that people knew that it was Jane.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so sad.
Yeah. And in 1832, Richard Bentley purchases the remaining copyrights for all of her novels, and the next year published 5 illustrated volumes as a part of his standard novels series. In October of 1833, he released the first collected edition of her works,
and
they have been consistently in print ever since
then. That's right,
They have never come out of print since he published
that. That's amazing.
That. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
Good for her siblings for... making sure that it got done.
It just shows you how close their family was.
Yeah,
that
and
they
also
like...
just how much they valued her talent.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. They thought it was worth her final works getting published. And now, you know, you can read her unfinished work.
Right,
like,
sure.
Her unfinished works are now available. I don't know that her, like, plays and stuff are, but I know you can read Sanditon.
And
the Watsons
can.
Too.
Yeah.
And Love and Friendship even has gotten circulated now. There was like a mini series that was loosely based on a combination of Love and Friendship and Lady Susan.
That's right.
Which also never got published. So there's like it's out. Her unfinished stuff
the
is out there.
The estate is making things
available. Yeah, that's her. That's Jane Austen.
Amazing.
I love her. She's my favorite.
I do too. She is so interesting.
Yeah.
And, like, I love a female author that was, like, ahead of her time.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes.
In a lot of ways.
Yeah.
But still, like, this is what I'm saying is so interesting about her being kind of mostly a satirical author, but she also captures the period so well and so accurately.
It is a perfect portrait
of a snapshot.
What it was like to live in that financial bracket, sort of.
What it was like to be someone who thought the way she thought in that time, right? So, like, someone who didn't necessarily want to abide by,
like, buy
the
into
rules.
The whole thing,
and like this really interesting perspective that now is like a trope,
yeah,
and never would have been,
yeah,
if not for her writing.
Yeah.
So interesting.
So many of our, it's to me, her work, especially Pride and Prejudice, like, we treat it like Shakespeare now.
Absolutely.
Where so many stories are based off of.
Yes.
Like, everything's Romeo and Juliet, right?
Yeah.
Everything is Pride and Prejudice. Absolutely. Even when it's not Pride and Prejudice, everything is Pride and Prejudice.
So many, like, you know, that historical romance genre is huge right now. None of that would exist
without her
specifically Pride and Prejudice, but without all of her work, really. It, you know, it's so interesting. And it does make you really sad that she never got to see the effect that that had.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it makes you a little less sad because that wasn't her goal.
Yeah.
Which is really interesting. Because sometimes you get these people who are like, I worked my whole life
to be a writer,
and I never got to see the results of it, and that is sad. But she was just trying to provide for her family.
Yeah.
And she just liked what she did. And
I'm sure there was an element of, like,
well, but she
some pride in the recognition or whatever, but, like,
she wasn't trying to make a statement.
Yeah.
She was just trying to write it because that's what she thought.
Yeah.
And what was interesting
and
to her.
And it
she wasn't trying to change public opinion.
Really important that her family supported that. Because it would have been really easy for them to not.
Absolutely.
Because that was what she was doing was unusual for a woman
absolutely,
at the time.
Yeah.
So it would have been really, really easy for her family to be like, that's not, you
not
shouldn't
valuable.
Be saying that out loud.
Right.
But they, because of the people that they were.
Yeah.
Really valued not only her opinion, but also her voice and
absolutely.
Her writing and said, yeah, girl, tell them how it is.
Yeah.
Like,
she
could have easily not had that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just love her.
She's the best. We haven't done a Google autofill in a really long time. And she feels like a good one to do it for.
Let's
so
do it.
I've got was Jane Austen.
Okay.
Married. Never.
Nope.
Never.
Never.
Never. a feminist.
Interesting question.
I would say probably
for her time. I would say
yeah.
Well, but again, it depends on how you define feminist. Because, like I said, I don't think she was ever trying to make a political statement. So if you're looking at it from the perspective of, like, feminism as politics,
yeah.
Because
there's another one here that says a feminist writer. I would not call her a feminist writer.
No, but she believed in feminist ideals certainly.
Yes,
but she wasn't an activist necessarily.
She wasn't writing with like, for the feminist
to change things
critique.
In the movement.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Yeah, totally.
We have both rich and poor on here.
One of them.
I would say pretty strictly down the middle.
Definitely not rich.
Was she Victorian? This was not Victoria.
No. She was not.
She was not.
Everybody thinks anything in English history that isn't the Tudors was Victorian.
No, this was the Regency, babes. British.
Yes.
That she was.
Quite.
That she was. What should we do instead of was? I never, I'm.
Did.
Did. And marry.
Everybody wants
to get married. Have kids. Have children.
No.
No. Have siblings. Yes.
Yes.
Go to college.
Kind of.
She went to boarding
school. Not in the traditional sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Win any awards.
Oh.
She did not in her lifetime.
I was going to say, it had to have been posthumously.
Yeah, if there's
did,
any.
But
definitely
know.
Not in her lifetime.
No. They didn't really do that so much then, though, to be fair.
Yeah.
It wasn't quite as big.
Yeah. Write poetry. Some.
Not published,
but not published, unless you count what's in the juvenilia.
Sure, yeah.
Use a pen name. If you count a lady, then I suppose...
Her pen name was
A Lady. If you count a lady.
A Lady.
This novel is by A Lady.
The writer of Sense and Sensibility.
Her other pen name was full name.
The author of
the
Sense,
author of Sense and Sensibility. That's her first and last name. The author of is her middle name.
Yeah.
Sense and Sensibility is the last name. Oh, that feels like a good amount.
That's great.
Yeah.
That was a really good episode.
Thank you. I love Jane Austen.
I've been
had
waiting
a great
for
time.
It.
Yeah.
That was great. Well, thank you all so much for listening. We have one more May episode, and then we'll be into Pride Month.
Yes.
So that's exciting.
Give us suggestions, please.
Yes. If you have suggestions for any person or event or anything you'd like to hear about for Pride Month, we would love to receive those suggestions. You can email us at rememberthatpod@gmail.com. You can also shoot us a little message on Threads or Instagram. We are at RTT Pod. You can find us on Facebook if you want, but just don't message us there because I'm probably not going to see it.
Yeah.
And we would love it if you would leave us a rating and review wherever you listen to this podcast. And if you'd like to find me on the internet, I am at The Real Anna Webb.
And I'm at ACW Nerdfighter.
We got through it. Very full. Very sleepy.
Yeah.
And we did it.
And minimal goofing, I'd say.
For how goofy we are feeling, yeah.
Well, it's just because Jane Austen is very important.
Yeah.
And we had to talk about her because she's a big deal.
That's true. We love her.
Yes. All right. Well, until next time.
Remember that time.